plan is now fully in the open. It's not a conspiracy. It's not a theory. It literally says, by the way, it's not just, oh, maybe it'll be like this in the tech utopia when we bring in this utopia. No. This is a plan, right? And they're already implementing this now. And it's not a utopia. It's a dystopia.
Welcome back to The Great Reset. We're going to reveal the truth to all. No more fear-mongering. Well, maybe, kind of. No more questioning what the real story is, what the real agenda is of the Chinese Communist Globalists. Ironically, today we're going to discuss some source material from Alex Jones' InfoWars, brought to us by way of your boy Jay Dyer. What I'll do is, and I've got some sound clips here and there, we're going to go through this, basically the 8 points from the 8 predictions for the world in 2030, the World Economic Forum. This is basically where you've seen the truthers saying, they've been sharing this meme, you'll own nothing and you'll be happy. And we're going to take a look at that. Is this true? Is this fear-mongering? It seems a little too on the head. Well, we'll find out. You're going to be shocked. Prepare for shock. Now, the source, I'll put the link in the show notes. The source comes from, Alex Jones. He's got InfoWars, and then he's got, every now and then, Jay Dyer gets to do a little guest spot. I'm not jealous. I'm not mad. I don't hate. I congratulate, you know? And I don't know that Alex Jones and I would get along. I think we have two differing worldviews, and that's okay. I still love Alex Jones. But he did an episode, and you can find it on 79days.news. Don't ask me. I don't know. I got the link in the show notes. And I grabbed some audio clips from it. It's like an hour long. There's some audio clips, and my apologies in advance. Had to sort of record them a different way, so the quality isn't the greatest on some of the clips. Long story short, this was Alex Jones and Paul Watson. They play a short clip. Basically, there's this thing called the 8 points, right? The World Economic Forum was releasing this thing called the 8 points. And the World Economic Forum is important because that's, of course, got old Santa Klaus Schwab as the figurehead, right? Which we've been analyzing his books for the last few hours. And we see how the ideas from the books make their way into the 8 points that is on this clip that went viral. Which then, as the story goes, the World Economic Forum subsequently deleted it. I couldn't confirm that. But you're able to find copies online. There's enough mirror videos on YouTube. You can find a copy of it still. But the tweets were apparently deleted. A big cover up, right? From 2016, they were talking about this. And as you know, when we talked about the Fourth Industrial Revolution book that Santa Claus wrote, that was from 2016 as well. So again, long range planning. And as the conspiracy theory goes, the virus was unleashed in order to implement this devilish plan. But the 8 predictions for the world in 2030 video is the one that said, you'll own nothing and you'll be happy. And it's a full spectrum plan. It is the Great Reset. The 8 predictions turned into the Great Reset. Okay? Now I found the video online, and I watched just that video itself. Because Jay Dyer's Alex Jones hour-long thing is basically talking about the 8 points. But I thought, you know what, let me find the original video because I have so much skepticism on the truth of community that I was like, maybe these people have been played. Maybe they were played and this is like some hoaxer out there making a video saying, you know, because this happens, right? I've seen it before. So I found the video, and I thought, let me watch the source video, see if this is even true, see if it's authentic. So I watched the video, and I thought, well, this is a well-done hoax. No way would they be that brazen to say these things right to your face. to me, I literally, I watched it and I thought, this is some right-wing scare tactic nonsense. They're saying stuff like, the U.S. won't be the world's leading superpower anymore. And you won't get to eat meat. It'll be an occasional treat. And I thought, this is like, I mean, this is playing on every fear of every, like, red-blooded American right-wing fantasy.
You won't tell me what to do. Damn it.
Like, and I was like, this is stupid. But then, my friends, I was digging around on the World Economic Forum's website, and I confirmed it. And here's what I did confirm. Is the video real? I don't know, maybe. And after reading this document, I think it is real. But the 8 talking points, the 8 predictions, they are for sure real. They are for sure from 2016. I got a link. Again, I'll put it in the show notes. It's WEF Forum, like World Economic Forum, weforum.org/agenda/2016/11/8. Oh, boy. Well, it's a long string. Sorry. Turns out. 8 predictions for the world in 2030 is the name of the document. And, let's take these point by point, right? And as Jay Dyer, he kind of goes through it on the fourth hour. He does a good job of it. And like I said, I watched Jay Dyer's video first, and I was like, I don't know. Your boy Jay seems to be a little too into Alex Jones's world. Like, maybe, you know, maybe that's what, you know, there's a bit of showmanship in the show business industry a little bit, right? Like, I would expect if I was hosting Alex Jones's show, that I'd have to amp it up a little bit. You'd have to sort of, thump the chest of the Patriot a little bit harder. You know what I'm saying? So, like, I see this and I think, okay, you know, maybe Jay's just passionate about it because Alex Jones is, like, egging him on. And maybe this video isn't even real. And then I see the document and I think, holy crap, it's real. And then, I know Jay, I respect his work. He's done way more research on the globalists than I have. Bertrand Russell and all these folks. Aldous Huxley. I'm familiar with their work, not to the level of taking notes and, what does he do? You know, he does like book club stuff with it, right? So I thought, well, I still want to take a look for myself. So let's take a look at these talking points. The first one, the big one. The big one that made me think this is fake. The U.S. will no longer be the world's superpower and will decline and be reintegrated into a global federation. Come on, really?
It starts out by saying that the U.S. will not be an economic superpower. All right, so the U.S. is going to decline. The U.S. is going to experience possibly some sort of reintegration into a global federation, as Klaus himself says in his books. So remember, this is the head of the World Economic Forum, Davos. Klaus Schwab is the guy behind this whole project here. And he works with the top elites. Remember, we've looked at Davos for many years, the elites that go to Davos, very similar to more of a public version of Bilderberg, that kind of a thing. But you'll notice that right away they said we've got to target the U.S. The U.S. has to be destroyed, has to decline, and then he ultimately says be reintegrated into some form of global federation.
Well, it's true. I read it right here. I'm going to read to you from the document. The U.S. dominance is over. We have a handful of global powers. Nation states will have staged a comeback, writes Robert Muga, research director at the Igarapé Institute. Instead of a single force, a handful of countries, the U.S., Russia, China, Germany, India, and Japan, chief among them, show semi-imperial tendencies. However, at the same time, the role of the state is threatened by trends, including the rise of cities and the spread of online identities. So again, they're saying that with the globalization of the world, with the rollout of the internet globally, the fourth industrial revolution with 5G, with the Internet of Things, with Elon Musk's Starlink satellites. Because, you know, only like half the planet's got access to the internet. But once they implement this, and everyone can be connected, it does blur things quite a bit, right? Like, look at my humble little podcast. I know that most of my audience is in America, but there's a good chunk in Australia and the UK. I've shipped books over to South Africa, all over the place. I've sent them all over the place. So we're connected, right? Here we are connected, sharing ideas, thoughts, philosophies. And I don't know how it hits on the other end from the other countries, because I, you know, I'm a patriot kind of guy. I'm an American exceptionalist on some levels. I try to add to the narrative to steer things into the vision I would like, but because I don't agree with everything we do at all, by any means, by any stretch. There are some, in fact, imperial tendencies, as this document suggests. So, again, like most things, there's shades of gray in these statements. But let's keep our eye on the prize here. The fact of the matter is they are using one statement on this advertisement for the World Economic Forum and the globalization agenda. They say the U.S. will not be the world's leading superpower and will decline and be reintegrated into a global federation. That's what they want. And this just fuels the theories of the virus being unleashed and economic issues, because that's what they want. And that's kind of where I was going when I was talking about the mask things controversially on Instagram. I said, look, we gotta try, America. We can't have this cavalier attitude of like social Darwinism of like, oh, F it. Only old people are dying. I'm going out there. I'm going out without my mask, and I'm saying, F it. We got to keep this thing rolling. Because I'm saying we need to keep the economy rolling. So let's try to be as smart as we can about this. If the mask helps, which I agree. I've done enough research now that I'm like, I don't think it really helps. It helps confidence in people that do have fear from the virus to go out there and continue to shop, which therefore keeps the U.S. dollar strong, which therefore keeps us from playing into Santa Claus's hand. Santa Claus tells you that the U.S. will not be the world's leading superpower. And what is he talking about? Economically, he's talking about the strength of the U.S. dollar, which is like the global standard. They want to wreck the U.S. dollar. They want to wreck the U.S. economy. Does this sound like InfoWars or what? I sound like Alex Jones right now. But that's what they want, right? They want to crush us. And like, if we give in to this attitude of like social Darwinism and like, oh, let the old people die. Oh, I don't care. It's just the cold, which I get it, right? If you're in the right age group or you don't have the comorbidities, it's just the cold. It's true. But it's wrecking old people. It's wrecking nursing homes. I talked to my man the other day who, I don't want to, he knows something, he's very close with someone who's a mortician, and this person confirmed, they suggested that maybe the death counts are much higher than even indicated by the mainstream media. A lot of weird things going on, okay? I'm not saying let's live in fear, I'm just saying let's keep the U.S. dollar strong and the U.S. economy going, because Santa Claus wants it the other way. He wants to reintegrate us into the globalist communist Chinese agenda. Then he says, a handful of countries will dominate. This is what Jay, so I'm going off of Jay Dyer's notes a little bit too. There's a handful of countries that will dominate. These countries will be selected to run. Jay Dyer suggests it'll be China, because you've got these influential globalist organizations like the International Monetary Fund, the World Economic Forum, etc. The World Health Organization is part of this, right? Because you know who the big donors are for the WHO? It was America, Bill Gates, China. And there's lots of questions about China's role in this whole thing. Because if you remember back in, I believe it was January, the WHO came out and said, no, it's not a respiratory thing. It's totally cool. It's fine. Everything's fine. Well, they knew over there in China that it wasn't fine. And they probably had a conversation with the WHO and said, hey, it's not fine. You would think. Or they lied. Someone's lying. Hell, even Trump lied. You heard that video with Bob Woodward. He's like, yeah, I knew back in January or February it was a respiratory thing. You know, it's not the touch thing. The touch thing is one thing, but the respiratory thing is very bad. That's what he said. They all knew. They all knew. Okay. And then Jay Dyer, he talks about how the OSS trained Mao's guerrillas to set up communism in China. That's a rabbit hole, right? But he's saying there's links to Mao, Skull and Bones at Yale, George Bush, right? Because George Bush was running the CIA, George Bush Sr. there. But there's links to this, right? The suggestion is that there's a deep state on some levels in America in bed with the communists, which is very strange to me because, and like I said, this is a rabbit hole we're not going to get into today, but it's very strange to me because every PSYOP, every CIA, FBI, COINTELPRO, all these organizations, they've done nothing less of being shady to fight communism. But now we're also being told that, oh, and by the way, they also are trying to set up communism. Next point, they say you're going to eat much less meat. And Jay Dyer, he talks about how Plato was revealing that they would, in fact, be attacking the food system in his book, The Republic. Because they don't want you to be fit and healthy.
That you may have forgotten about. But we haven't forgotten about it because I cover all these global elite books, is diet. A long, long time ago, Plato said that diet is one of the things that you have to attack. You have to attack people's food supply because that's a basic function of energy in the economy, right? In society, is people eating to do the slave labor that they're going to do, and they don't want you to be healthy and fit. And of course, the most nutrient optimal diet for a human being is meat and meat fats. And so they want to first and foremost get rid of meat. Why do you think so many of these global elitists in the last 2 years have poured billions of dollars into veganism, into banning meat, into fake meat, into making poop meat? I'm not joking, by the way, that's a Bill Gates project. He actually wants you to eat SH, you know what? Literally.
Yeah, he's saying the elites have been, you know, messing around with the veganism stuff, making the fake meat, making the meat made from the doo-doo. That can't be true, can it? Well, let's take a look. The 8 talking points document says, point 5, we are eating much less meat. Rather, like our grandparents, we will treat meat as a treat rather than a staple, writes Tim Benton, professor of population ecology at the University of Leeds in UK. It won't be big agriculture or little artisan producers that win, but rather a combination of the two, with convenience food redesigned to be healthier and less harmful to the environment. But I'll tell you why the elites are investing in this plant-based meat. And you have to look at the statement made in Santa Claus's book. He said, to feed the world in the next 50 years, we have to produce the same amount of meat from the last 10,000 years. Why is he saying that? Well, he says that based on the models of population growth. So either he's lying, or he knows something. And like I always say, I don't think these elitists are stupid. They're definitely not stupid. But, you know, the real question, is there an evil agenda behind this? I mean, kind of, right? Because I eat meat. I think if you get it sourced properly and you eat it properly and the right amounts and the right kinds, like, totally healthy. But, like, to me, what pulls me over to the vegan argument is that these animals, if you read any of Michael Pollan's books talking about this stuff or Fast Food Nation, again, could be propaganda. What do I know? Everyone's got arguments for everything. Choose your own reality. But these animals, they're not treated well. They're treated very cruelly in these factory farms. And to me, like, I don't think that's the solution. I don't want that. I think there should be a sustainable, sort of grass-fed, humanely treated ideal. But the problem with that is it's expensive. You can't scale that. And, you know, I always question, like, how can you be pro-life and not restrict population, you know, reproducing? How can you be pro-life and be like, yeah, have all the kids you want, but then also not have some solution for food and how we eat meat properly? I don't know what the answer is. I mean, these are big questions, right? But I think that's what the elites are seeing when they look into plant-based meats, which on some levels I'm okay with. Like, it's not great, but to say, you know, to sort of say, oh, you're going to eat poop, I mean, that's a stretch a little bit. Besides, if you read how these factory farms work in these meat packing plants, guess what you're eating? If you buy regular-ass meat, even if you buy fancy organic meat, maybe, who knows, you're eating poop. Because the... Okay, here, let me break this down real quick. I've done this before, but let me do it again. So here's what it works, according to Michael Pollan, who I believe. He says that these cows on these factory farms, they gotta, like, fatten these things up because in the Western diet, we like a fattier meat, okay? We're accustomed to it. So they feed them corn and grain. And then, you know, when they eat the corn, they're not supposed to eat corn. They're not made for it. They're supposed to eat grass. And when they eat the corn, they get abscesses in their stomachs. They have multiple stomachs. Well, instead of feeding them the grass that they're supposed to eat, big agriculture is like, I know, let's just give them antibiotics. That way we can keep feeding them corn. It fattens them up quicker. It's what the Americans are used to, and they love it. Let's just put them on an antibiotic drip. That way they can keep growing and keep eating the corn. Full of abscesses, full of pus, full of all this, these issues, infections. So they do that. Then they take them to the slaughterhouse. Then they cut them open and they're running them down this factory as fast as they can on these hooks or whatever. They cut them open. And sometimes, and they use a ton of illegal immigration, by the way. And sometimes they'll cut them open and they accidentally slice open the stomach or the colon or whatever. Or these abscesses have created these crazy issues. And now you got all this doo-doo in your meat. You got the doo-doo, abscesses, all this gross stuff is now in the meat because it got all interstitially mixed in. Now it's in your steak. Now it's in your cheeseburger. Okay. So the food industry, instead of being like, oh, this is a problem from the jump, but the problem with that is they're too busy. We live off of corn and soy, right? All your tax dollars go to pay for corn and soy farmers. So instead of changing all that, which again, you know, they pay for all the corn, they invest in the corn, byproduct is high fructose corn syrup, which goes into all your processed foods. So instead of changing anything, they just keep going. And then they say, I know, so there's poop in the meat. Let's just like bleach it. Let's just irradiate it and kill it off all the bacteria so that it's actually like benign doo-doo. The fecal matter is not there's no bacteria in it. And that's what they do. Then they essentially dye it red. So it looks red. And they cover it in plastic, which will sit in a landfill forever and ever before it makes its way out to the oceans and chokes a pelican. And that's the way it works. Not a very good model, if you ask me. So is Santa Claus telling the truth that we're going to eat less meat? Probably. Let's talk about that doo-doo, baby. What's up with the doo-doo, baby? Well, back in 2011... I found this article that these Japanese scientists are making poop steaks. Yep. I'm going to read you. From digitaltrends.com. Somehow this feels like a Vonnegut plotline. Population boom equals food shortage. Solution? Synthesize food from human waste matter. Absurd, yes, but Japanese scientists have actually discovered a way to create edible steaks from human feces. It talks about this guy at the Okayama Laboratory. Went to the sewage plant, approached the scientists because of the overabundance of sewage mud. And they were like, could you find a way to make this sewage mud into protein? Because there's lots of protein in the bacteria there. So they extract the protein, combine it with some reaction enhancers to make a steak. And they color the poop meat red with the food color, that's what they do, and enhance the flavor with soy protein. Initial test of people saying it even tastes like beef. And that's another thing. If you are looking at plant-based meats, I think Bill Gates invested in Beyond Meat, but Beyond Meat is a better products. I've looked into this, right? Because I'm not a vegetarian by any stretch, but I try to, like, reduce my meat consumption on some levels, sometimes. And beyond meat, they don't use soy. You don't want the soy. They use a pea protein, right? Is it better? I don't know. I talked to my nutrition coach. She says it's all garbage. Just eat meat. So, hey, I don't know. You know, how much do you care about the animals? I do. I care. Now, recall how I talked about, if you listen to my Stabby show, we had a whole show on old Ball Gates, Bill Gates himself, and we talked about how he's obsessed with the doo-doo, baby. Why is he so obsessed with it? Making toilets to prevent the fecal polio transmission? Jay implies he's going to be making steaks out of the poop. I don't know. Yeah, one thing I do know, these nerds are going to kill us, right? We know that. Now, Jay does a good job on this hour-long thing comparing the World Economic Forum and Santa Claus to, like, Spectre or Hydra, right? It's a global cabal. It's the globalist. It's the umbrella. It's the octopus. We've heard this metaphor many times from many truthers. Like the Davos, Switzerland place where they all meet up, World Economic Forum, it's the octopus. And he says, this isn't going to be a utopia. It's going to be a dystopia. And I agree. Like, why should we trust these people? I don't trust people with that level of wealth and power. I just don't. Like, to me, like, I trust a guy, you can be wealthy, you can be powerful, but, like, if you're, like, spending your free time messing around with these elitists and stuff, I don't know, I question it, man, I question it. Like, just make your little Trump bucks and go on vacations and chill. What are you doing? Be out here trying to make the master plan for the masses. They think they have a God complex. They think that the masses are so stupid, and maybe they're right on some levels, but they're like, they're so stupid. We need to control them and manipulate them to doing what we think is right. And like, sorry, dude, like just because you can make a lot of money, just because you can be powerful, like that doesn't make you a good person. In fact, that makes me question your ethics more, because I can tell you my personal journey in the corporate world. With the day job stuff, I come to the conclusion, and I was fast burning. I got my master's degree. I'm like, I'm moving to the top, baby. I'm going to be running this place. And I made it up to the point where I got to, like, I don't know, what do you call it, like mid-management level. And I thought, dude, this is not worth it. Because the next step up is like, these guys are stressed out. They're working too many hours. And I'm like, dude, that life ain't for me. There ain't enough money in the world to make me want to do this. So the kind of person that signs on for that, you got to question them. I don't think that's always bad, though. But like I said, there's a lot of suspicious motivations there, okay? Next, they talk about the 8 points. They scare you with the refugees. They say that they're going to integrate refugees to disrupt the economy through stresses on the welfare system. More welfare strains on the taxpayer. Jay asserts this is a form of warfare. I think what he's suggesting, and I don't want to put words in his mouth, but like, I think what he's saying is that if they can give us an influx of refugees that need a helping hand, and we say, come on in. Come on into America like we've always done. That this puts a strain on the system. And that, again, it's all warfare, apparently. This idea that the virus gets unleashed on us. Anything to crush the economy. So if that's one way they can do it, I don't disagree, maybe. Then, now, does the World Economic Forum literally say this? Sort of. I'm going to read you from the document, and you can come to your own conclusion. Point six here. Today's Syrian refugees, 2030's CEOs. Highly educated Syrian refugees will have come of age by 2030, making the case for the economic integration of those who have been forced to flee conflict. The world needs to be better prepared for populations on the move, writes Lorna Solis, founder and CEO of the NGO Blue Rose Compass, as climate change will have displaced 1 billion people. Now, the sort of conclusion I come to is that, you know, welfare is considered this like ultra evil thing. And I don't really believe that. We've got a lot of immigrants in this country that have done great things. I think that on some levels you can enable people, keep a safety net below them. But we do want to steer them back to work, right? Like, we always got to find a path to employment. Make minimum wage high enough to make it enticing, so on and so forth. You've heard all this stuff. But, like, here's the thing. Socialism and welfare, it's already well established in America, so let's not pretend it doesn't. A lot of people don't understand that. What do you think taxes are? It's redistributing funds for the good of the whole. That's why you pay your taxes. I would argue the real patriots who care about America and Americans pay their taxes. I get it, though. I get it. People hate it because they're like, Isaac, I don't want to give my money to the government. They just give it to their crony buddies. Yeah, well, you're right. It does happen. The lobbyists get a chunk of it. I mean, it trickles. I think that's like the trickle-down economics. Like, you give up, you know, I don't know, we'll say $500 a check to the government, and maybe you see $100 of improvement in the local infrastructure. I get it. It's also a jobs program, right? But yeah, what do you think? Get people that have kids. They take my money. I don't have kids. F them kids. But they take my money. Half my property taxes pay for their school. I think if you got 8 kids, you got to pay more for schooling, but they don't. We all pay our fair share. Every year with the tax returns. Guess who gets my money? Because they shat out some kids. Right? I don't get those child care credits. But you know what? I'm okay with it. Because the reason they do it is to keep the economy going. Because kids are a big booster for the economy. You got to sell. You got to buy them all this stuff. You got to get them products. You got to buy them Christmas presents. You got to get them the braces. Johnny wants the football glove. Johnny wants the football glove. You going to deny him the football glove? Come on. Then stimulus checks, too. Remember when they had the stimulus checks back in April with the Trump bucks? If you had kids, you got like an extra, I don't know what you got, sliced off some extra cheddar. I was like, damn, man. Is it worth it? I don't know. Probably not. Anyways, not to mention, we talked about all the taxes. But anyway, so the argument here is that, well, you know, they always try to lower the corporate tax rate. Because you want the corporations to pay their share. I want them to pay their share. I pay my share. How come you weasels get out of it? But the argument is always that we shouldn't tax the successful. The problem is that those people that got successful did it off the backs of the middle class. Working in their low-paying jobs with no benefits, spending what little income they get on the on their products. So yes, they should be reinvesting in America and paying their damn taxes. However, as we'll talk about on the next episode with your man Bill Cooper. Bill Cooper, he rightfully asserted, he has the best argument against socialism. He rightfully asserts that socialism will lead to communism and government control, which is the main crux of the argument from every truther out there. And I don't disagree with it. I think he's right. That's why I think you got to keep this thing balanced. But if we want to pretend that like one form of socialism in America is completely unacceptable, but another one is, like, we need to like look inward a little bit. I'm just saying there's got to be a checked level of socialism. Next point, pollution. And Jay asserts that, like, look, they think that America is the only one, they're picking on America. America's the only one making carbon dioxide? Come on. And they want to tax it now. They want a carbon tax is a tax on life. And guess where that tax goes? It goes to the international banking system. And it simultaneously weakens the American economy, which is what they want. They want to push us into this global federation. Now, I didn't see anything on this in the books. I didn't see anything on this in the 8 points. I could have missed it. I dug as deep as I could. I couldn't find anything on this idea that, oh, America's the only one pumping out carbon dioxide and they need taxed on it. I mean, they talk about redistributing allocations of carbon, but I didn't see anything about, oh, America's the worst, punish them. Maybe that's in the works, though. Could be. Could be. Because if you recall Santa Claus in the Fourth Industrial Revolution book, he was talking about locking down the natural resources, right? And Jay talks about this on the show. He's like, you know, Klaus wants to lock down the natural resources like your water, and you're gonna have to. They're gonna reallocate it. They're gonna distribute it to who they think deserves it, and you're only gonna get your little slice. So it's fair for everyone. And they call it the New Covenant. It's gonna be run off of AI. They're gonna ration out what's fair. It's communism. But guess who? It's not gonna be communism for the elite that'll just drink as much water as they want. They'll take the long shower. And this is just another technocracy, fascism working its way through the corporates to push communism based on need.
And it's slavery. And it's always been the case that, yeah, you can have theoretically a local welfare system, but when the centralized federal government tries to have welfare for the entire country, right, since what LBJ's Great Society Project, and now there's going to be a global welfare system that they're calling a credit system, the social credit score, the universal income. All the tech elites are saying this. This is insane. And in fact, Klaus even says in this book that they're going to make sure that when they lock down all natural resources, including water, they're going to say, they're saying, we're going to ration it to you, you see, based on a new set of values, which he calls the New Covenant. I'm not joking. That's what he says in his book. He says it's a new religious covenant. He doesn't use the word religion, but what is a covenant? It's religious. It's from the Bible.
Now, the book doesn't go, the books, I should say, they don't go into that level of detail to support this argument. There's a little bit of hyperbole. I don't know that he's wrong, though. Like, for instance, the term ration doesn't appear in the books. It doesn't spell out, like, oh, we want to ration water. But you could read between the lines to see that, so I don't think he's wrong. I just, you got to take that with a grain of salt, right? Look at, let's see here. Let me look at it for you here. Now, I'll read you from this is from the Fourth Industrial Revolution book. I'm going to read this to you one more time. It says, the unparalleled wealth generated by nearly three centuries of industrialization has not only been unevenly spread among people, but has come at a significant cost to Earth's natural systems. Climate, water, air, biodiversity, forest, and oceans are all under unprecedented, severe, and increasing stress. Species are going extinct at up to 100 times natural levels. In 1800, only 3% of the world's population of 1 billion lived in urban areas. Today, more than 50% of the world's 7.4 billion inhabitants live in urban areas. And it goes on into climate change and all that stuff. I mean, so it could be argued that, you know, maybe he's right. Maybe they do want to do that. I don't, there's a lot of talk about blockchain and AI and redistributing. So, like, I don't think he's wrong. I'm just saying it's not spelled out that clearly in the book if you're looking for it, okay? Now, what I did find, there was a citation in the book linking to a different World Economic Forum document. Because Jay goes into discussing the New Covenant, and I didn't find that in the books. But there is a citation, and I don't know where Jay got that from exactly. Maybe he just read this and he was, you know, being concise and quick. If you go to www.weforum.org. Oh, shit. Well, it's called WEFGAC Values 2013. This talks about covenants, okay? This is from 2013, by the way. They've been looking for a big event to push the Great Reset. Okay. Here we go. Many previous efforts have focused on individual rights, which are essential. But our focus is on what we owe to one another, both within nations and among nations. If the goal is the restoration of broken trust, it requires the restoration of mutual responsibility. Okay, I mean, not bad so far. At least he acknowledges individual rights, right? Wrong. You can hear he's laying in the flowery language for the communists. Then he says, in the democracies of Western Europe and North America, and in other advanced industrial democracies elsewhere in the world, there was, for some 35 to 40 years after the Second World War, to a lesser or greater extent, a clear social contract between citizens and their governments. In some countries, this was implicit, and in others, explicit. In addition to democratic and transparent elections, a functioning justice system and security against internal and external threats, the state promised citizens access to universal education, a degree of support in old age, and the provision of varying degrees of safety nets against ill health, unemployment, and other unpredictable life events. The extent to which citizens were covered by this contract was marked by cleavages along racial, ethnic, and other lines, of course. But even for marginalized groups, the ideal of a social contract provided a powerful moral framework for them to assert their rights. Okay. Still good, right? Well, let's keep reading. Let's keep going. Here we go. Perhaps most importantly, many states had as a clear goal the achievement of full employment, and citizens had the expectation that if they worked hard, they would get a just and fair reward for their labor. They could expect to enjoy economic security and even attain a higher standard of living than their parents, and in turn better prospects for their children than for themselves. Moreover, the promise was widely enjoyed. Income inequality declined substantially in many countries during this period. They also had a clear expectation that the state would help protect the value of their savings and assets. This was the era of as safe as houses. Of course, many governments failed at times to deliver on some of these goals, but there was reasonable consensus that these were the appropriate goals. So, what's going on here? I think he's trying to lay on the argument that our people, our governments have failed us. And that, you know, none of this is really working. We have this agreement and none of it's working. They're letting you down. And I think that the corporations are the ones that ruined all this. This is where I call BS. Like Bill Gates, he's hanging out with all these elitists, these globalists. How do you think he became the richest man in the world? Through cutthroat capitalism. And you got to look at the World Economic Forum as an organization. This is limited. This is literally limited to the thousand of the world's biggest corporations. So the corporations that make things bad are and greedy, right? They're the ones that are going to pull us out of this. Like they try to reduce, they ship all the jobs overseas. They try to reduce benefits and retirement plans and labor wages as low as they possibly can, and fire as many people as they can. And then they want to be like, yeah, the government really let you down. You know, you can't even live the life that your parents had now. Well, no shit. Because you guys are out here, CEOs are making like a bazillion times the level of the employee, buying multiple, making more money than they'll ever spend. And then these are the guys that are going to be pulling us out of this? Give me a break. The membership fees, it's like $40,000 a year to be a member of the World Economic Forum, at least. It's higher than that now. That was from 2009. It depends on your level of involvement. You want more involvement, it goes up. They're paying more for their membership into the global specter here than what some people make annually at the jobs. Isn't that crazy? But again, even the most, most people should be wary of this, right? The big corporations, this is a big talking point, the big corporations, the biggest ones in the world, are rebuilding the whole system. That's who's behind the Great Reset. The big corporations. The same people that have been squeezing all the money out of the middle class. And it's like they're saying, hey, you know, we're successful to the point that it's a problem for all the poor people, so let's figure out a way to get wealth back to these poor people. We'll do it by making them follow some new rules so they can more understand how to appropriately share amongst each other. Dude, that's cold-blooded. That's narcissistic, and that's cold-blooded. I mean, it's crazy. Anyway, that's what really fires me up. You know, it's like those Venn diagrams where you got all the truthers and we all disagree on certain things, but we agree on some things. We all agree that a great reset is bullshit, okay? Let me keep reading. Yeah, then they have the ball. Here's what it says. This says, at the end of the 19th century, the ratio of the richest 20% in the world to the poorest 20% was approximately 7 to 1. At the end of the 20th century, it was 75 to 1. 75 to 1. 80% of the real increase in wealth in the USA between 1980 and 2005 only went to the top 1% of the population. 80, did you hear that? 80% of the increase in wealth in America went to 1% over the last 25 years. Now in the USA, the richest 400 people have as much wealth as the poorest 155 million people. Economic inequality in the UK is the highest in recorded history. It went from having inequality levels similar to the Netherlands in 1979 to being one of the most unequal developed countries in the world. In most advanced countries, the ratios of CEO pay to the pay of the average worker in their company has risen astronomically over the last 30 years. And inequality has grown rapidly in many countries around the world, often fueled by corruption and excessive greed. The stability conversation that is also taking place about the dangerous and growing conflicts over the resources of food, water, land, and energy because of scarcity and maldistribution. Again, the top 1,000... corporations, the richest people in the world, are out here saying, oh, these rich people are taking all the money. Oh my god, we're gonna help you poor people figure this out. We're here to help. So the people causing the inequality are going to solve the inequality. Okay, makes sense. And they use that term maldistribution. That's the coded language there. Oh, and it goes on and on and on. I got more notes here. Let me concisely sum this up, because you don't want to hear me talk for another hour. He basically goes on and on, and I don't know who the author of the document is. I picture Santa Claus in my head, but I don't think that's who wrote this. They talk about how trust has eroded from the common folks. Again, he's making people doubt their own government. He says people have little trust in their governments and institutions, believe they are penalized for the mistakes of others who continue to reap handsome awards. Because he's talking about how the rich people were, you know, rolling dice with these house derivatives things that caused the housing market crash and all this stuff, and taking all the money, which again is like everyone in this group. Very strange. And here we go. He says, citizens around the globe demand new, more transparent, collaborative, and inclusive models of value creation that produce well-being, happiness, and meaning as much as profits. Okay, so, I mean, kind of, right? I mean, this is how I feel. We don't trust these people. Why would I look at them to solve the problems, though? I would postulate that they see a possible revolution, an overthrow from the masses through internet connectivity, and they keep trying to throw these things at us to divide us, to have an us versus them mentality. I mean, an us versus us mentality, excuse me, so that it doesn't turn into an us versus them. Because they are concerned that we could organize and overthrow these psychopaths. They want to dupe us into giving them more power. Because they're going to be like, look, see how much inequality is? Why don't you let us distribute the funds, and that'll make it fair for everyone. Fair for who, right? Oh, the greedy people that took everything are going to redistribute it so that it's fair. Okay, that makes sense. And this is why they're trying to censor, okay? This is the agenda behind censorship. And, you know, Trump's doing right by pushing that Section 230 stuff. What we're supposed to believe is that this World Economic Forum is comprised of the elites who care about us, not the ones that took advantage of us. And it comes down to, who do you trust? You think Bill Gates is trustworthy? You think he's trying to eradicate polio because he cares? Or do you think he wants to be etched in the history books as the man who eradicated polio? And they lay out this idea that millennials believe that businesses should be measured by more than just profit, and that these businesses are, in fact, more successful when they accommodate multiple stakeholders. So they're saying that the millennials will push for this. And the document lays out these weird ideas that this is like some new initiative that they're going to have these sort of 10 commandments. And it says like, oh, the purpose of the corporation is to harness private interest to serve public interest. Corporations shall accrue fair returns for shareholders, but not at the expense of the legitimate interest of other stakeholders. Corporations shall operate sustainably, meeting the needs of the present generation without compromising future. And here's a big one. Here, get ready for this. Corporations shall distribute their wealth equitably amongst those who contribute to its creation. And that's not bad, right? That sounds okay. But like I said, you gotta look at the long game, look at the chess game here. Corporations shall not infringe on the right of natural persons to govern themselves, nor infringe on other universal human rights. But we can see some of the ideas of redistributing here. But here is where we go, finally. Where we get into the social covenant talk. Jeez, that took a long time, right? Lack of trust is bad for politics, bad for business, and bad for overall public morale. It undermines people's sense of participation in the society, undermines feelings of social responsibility, and makes people feel isolated and alone, worried more about survival than solidarity. While the contract was broken, a sense of covenant is now more needed. Fused with a sense of moral values and commitments, and the process of formulating new social covenants could be an important part of finding solutions. Now, if we look at this even more paranoid, we could see how they're seeing that their structure is in fact under threat. And they think, how can we dupe the masses into continuing to live like this with no wages, no power, no resources, no wealth? We dupe them into thinking that businesses will provide the ethical redistribution to take care of everyone. That'll make them happy. And we all know where that ends. The Chinese communist globalist agenda. Now the scientist, okay, back to the 8 points, okay? They say that the scientists will keep you healthy in space. And even find aliens, the start of a journey to find alien life, the 8 points says. Now Jay talks about this, and you know, he comes from the camp of like, the Brookings Institute wanted to replace the biblical values of the West so that they could roll out this alien life stuff. Pope Francis, apparently he's aligning with Santa Claus. That's per that Cardinal Vigano guy. I don't know if you caught all that drama. And Jay's like, oh, they want to split the church down the middle, right? And again, this plays into the divide and conquer strategy. They want it us versus us so they can break us apart and reintegrate us into the global government. And this could be where the alien agenda comes in. Part of breaking down Western democracy. Breaking down religion. And when we did that controversial show on Black Lives Matter and the Marxist connections they have, you recall that that's where I said, well, this is doesn't make any sense. Because the BLM movement was like, pro, what's the religion? Yoruba, African diaspora religion. But Marx and Marxism is very anti-religious. Like, it's very atheist. Oh my God, my dog's, she's so mad. She's mad at the Chinese communist globalists too. She took too many of the Alex Jones male vitality boner juice pills. But yeah, you can see that that's part of the agenda. They got to shut down and destroy Christianity as part of the process. Then it says, Western values will have been tested to the breaking point. And I think they're saying the free market capitalism will be tested to the breaking point through this virus, right? Through the, the deadly virus. And that's what you can read. The vibe in his book, if you go back to the first episode of this journey about the Great Reset, that he claims that the new normal is coming because we are going to incorporate more socialism into our free market capitalism system to take care of people, because we're going to see the devastation this lays upon a lot of folks, which I don't know if he's wrong about that. It's, we kind of hit socialism buttons a few times already with stimulus bills. Now, and Jay says that, I didn't know this, but I guess Santa Claus and Prince Charles did a podcast on the Great Reset, talking about how capitalism has to go away because it doesn't work. You know, Prince Charles does show up in some of the videos for the World Economic Forum. So, yeah, I believe that, right? And I did see the podcast. I haven't listened to it, though. But Jay, his argument is that the new system will, in fact, be worse than the old one. The utopia that they promise will be a dystopia. It'll be worse for 99.9% of people, but better for that top 0.01%. And Klaus is over here saying that the top-down control system needs put in place so they can get rid of the middle class. But, like, why would we trust Prince Charles? You want to talk about, like, an elitist system. You've got this fake royal bloodline elitist who's like, oh, yeah. Even though I've done no work my whole life and I've just been in this royal palace because of my bloodline, this isn't a very fair world. You know what? Give me more of the money and I'll make sure that you get your proper share. Like, stay the F away from me, chief. And so I agree with Jay. I agree. Let's see what else we got here. Oh, they also say that, Jay's like, okay, yeah, so the existing system has problems, which ironically they're creating and making worse and exacerbating. And this is the problem reaction solution, which shows us how out of control humanity is. And look at all this chaos and protesting. My God, it's out of control. And it's a guilt tactic, right? Because they're trying to show us their solution. They're trying to sell us on their solution. The better way. A fair system to redistribute. I'm telling you, I agree with Jay 100% on this. Bill Gates' bazillion dollars is not being redistributed to us. It is not. They're going to make us a bunch of rats fighting for our share of the cheese. It's our income being redistributed to him. I agree with that. And then he goes into like all this stuff about how the UN, the International Monetary Fund, BP, they're all going to initiate the reset a la the French Revolution, which I'm not too hip on this stuff, but apparently they had to destroy the culture of France to rebuild the new one. Which is why Jay argues that's why they were removing the statues. They got to destroy the culture. And why basically everything in 2020 happened. And I can see that, right? They were tearing down statues. I saw it with my own eyes. Those Confederate statues were being taken down, amongst some others as well, I guess. But, you know, like I've said before, like, I'm not losing sleep over the Confederate statues being broken down. I mean, they lost, right? Why are we putting statues up of the people who lost? Get out of here. You know? They'll be waving your Confederate flag. This is America. We're all on one team now. You guys lost. Take your L's. Join America. Wave that American flag. However, the higher point of concern is the dilution of American-specific history. They want us to lose our identity. And this is the same principle you see. That's what Father Seraphim Rose was talking about with the ecumenicism movement. If every Christian, so like we're, you know, I'm an Orthodox Christian, and that's what Father Seraphim Rose was. And his argument is like, no, Orthodoxy is the true and only true faith. And if we open our arms up and embrace one another and say, well, you know, the Protestants are kind of right. Oh, the Catholics are kind of right. Yeah, we all love Jesus. Close enough. Like, that dilutes the true message. And I don't take that hardcore of a stance myself. Like, I kind of think that myself on some levels. But his argument is similar to this communism argument or the identity argument here. The more you dilute it down and join hands, the more the original message gets diluted and lost eventually. And that's what his argument is against allowing other faiths to also claim the title of Christian. Because like, I guess, you know, a lot of these sort of hardcores, these monks and stuff, they would say, no, like, if you're not Orthodox, you're going to hell. Like, some people take that stance. I don't know if I agree with that, but hey, you know, that's, I'm not a monk either, so who knows. Now, the big point, the you will own nothing and you'll be happy. That's the big one, right? That's the one that gets everyone's attention. Well, I agree with Jay. Bill Gates is going to distribute the funds. Again, you got to look at the 8 talking points of the future world. They're talking about the, by the year 2030, this is what's going to happen. He says it right here. He says, all products will have become services. Quote, I don't own anything. I don't own a car. I don't own a house. I don't own any appliances or any clothes. Quote, end quote, writes Danish MP Ida Auken. Shopping is a distant memory in the city of 2013, where inhabitants have cracked clean energy and borrow what they need on demand. It sounds utopian, until she mentions that her every move is tracked and outside the city live swathes of discontents, the ultimate depiction of a society split into two. So he's saying that's going to happen, but he's also saying like there's problems with that too. So like I always say with the old Santa Claus, I don't think he's entirely wrong, and I appreciate that on some levels he at least points out that he's aware that these other beliefs exist, right? These other visions exist. But, you know, it's true. Like, lots of people, they keep saying that we're moving to a subscription economy. I don't know if you noticed that, but, like, a lot of products are like, oh, you got to subscribe now. Like, for literally the other day, I was looking at a seltzer water soda, and you had to subscribe to it through online. I'm like, I don't want to subscribe to it. What are you talking about? I'll buy it when I need it. I don't know that I'm going to continue to love this for the rest of my life. But, you know, that's where we're heading. So on some levels, he might be right. Now, let's see. Now, Jay supports this this you'll own nothing concept with the promotion of the circular economy. Okay, and we talked about this, right? This, in fact, came up. The idea that you'll own nothing. They do this. They're going to do this by making you feel guilty for hurting Mother Earth through the emissions of your car. You have too many kids. You use too much energy, et cetera, et cetera. And Jay's like, oh, this is the eco-religion. The new sin is ecocide via overconsumption. Right? The new covenant of morals will make the new values for the whole world, especially the West. Keeping us in check. Because right now, like, we do consume a lot of energy. But we got a lot of people, too. Right? You can't forget that. Our very population density is very high here. Well, is that... I don't know. Maybe that's the wrong term. Our population is very high. I don't know if the density is high, but the population is. Now, let's see. Yeah, so here... okay, there's a section... Oh, okay. I correct my earlier statement. We talked about this so the fourth industrial revolution, there's a section called A New Social Covenant on Values, and it's an essay by the World Economic Forum from 2012. But that 7-page PDF I was reading from earlier, the Global Agenda Council on Values, A New Social Covenant, is the one that goes into more detail. So we already covered that. I gotta correct myself on that misstep. That's where that came from. Jay says there's lots of TED Talks reinforcing all these great reset ideas. And he's talking about there's like an old model, right? And I think that he might be talking about the first, second, and third industrial revolution, maybe. That's what we talked about on the last show? But Jay is saying that this fourth revolution is the final revolution. And he cites Aldous Huxley, who said that, yes, we will bring about the end of man, the transhuman movement, and this great reset will be brought about through the lockdown to make this final age of man. Now, I dug a little bit deeper into this because I found it very curious. Huxley, of course, a name that shows up on my radar many times. Now, Aldous... Okay, so Aldous says that mankind, there's no fifth revolution because the technocracy and the ascension to the next plane of existence through technology will make it so. And by 2050, the plan will be fully in place. Well, you know, as you saw, there's a plan for 2030. The 8-point plan, the end of private property. So I dug into this. Aldous Huxley, who of course is the author of Brave New World, he spoke about the ultimate revolution at Berkeley in 1962. I believe it's real. They have an audio form of this plastered on the websites. I read through the transcript. And the event's moderator sums it up nicely. And he says, when he's introducing Huxley, he says, Mr. Huxley has recently returned from a conference at the Institute of the Study of Democratic Institutions in Santa Barbara, where the discussion focused on the development of new techniques by which to control and direct human behavior. Traditionally, it has been possible to suppress individual freedom through the application of physical coercion, through the appeal of ideologies, through the manipulation of man's physical and social environment, and more recently, through the techniques, the cruder techniques of psychological conditioning. The ultimate revolution, about which Mr. Huxley will speak today, concerns itself with the development of new behavioral controls, which operate directly on the psycho-physiological organisms of man, that is the capacity to replace external constraint by internal compulsions. What's this geek saying? Well, this is what David Icke talks about. It's the prison without the bars. And they're just going to bump it up a notch through technology. This is in 1962, mind you. They just needed the technology to catch up with the ideas. And he said, Huxley starts talking. He says, today we are faced, I think, with the approach of what may be called the ultimate revolution, the final revolution, where man can act directly on the mind-body of his fellows. Well, needless to say, some kind of direct action on human mind-bodies has been going on since the beginning of time. Now, Huxley, he's talking about how revolutions aim to change the environment in order to change the individual. There's nothing directly, specifically steered towards a person, but instead they would manipulate the surroundings, the environment. And he's saying that the new revolution, the ultimate revolution, will allow direct manipulation of the person. And guess what? Guess what? That's what this is all about. That's what the data collection is all about. Direct manipulation of the person. So you saw this. We talked about the social dilemma on Netflix. That's what this is. Direct manipulation of your brain through TikTok or whatever you're doing. Okay, let's keep reading. This is from Huxley. It seems to me that the nature of the ultimate revolution with which we are now faced is precisely this. That we are in the process of developing a whole series of techniques which will enable the controlling oligarchy who have always existed. I'm starting to sound like Nick Cage. I was practicing my Nick Cage voice, and why not? I'll keep reading like Nick Cage. Where were we? Oh, jeez. Which will enable the controlling oligarchy who have always existed and presumably will always exist to get people to love their servitude. This is the, it seems to me, the ultimate in malevolent revolutions, shall we say. And this is a problem which has interested me many years and about which I wrote 30 years ago in A Brave New World, which is an account of society making use of all the devices available and some of the devices which I imagine to be possible, making use of them in order to standardize the population, iron out inconvenient differences, to create mass-produced models of human beings arranged in some sort of scientific caste system. I've continued to be extremely interested in this problem, and I've noticed with increasing dismay a number of predictions which seemed fantastic 30 years ago, and now they're coming true. I'm starting to paraphrase here. This is too long-winded. There seems to be a general movement towards this ultimate revolution, a method of control by which people can be made to enjoy a state of affairs by which any decent standard they ought not to enjoy. This, the enjoyment of servitude, well, this process has gone on over the years, and I've become more and more interested in what is happening. And this is just like the 2030 goals with the 8 ideas of the Economic Forum there. They're trying to float this idea of servitude and get us to support it. And I believe Jay when he says that they're going to convince us that through shame, like, oh, well, you're hurting Mother Earth. You better check yourself. In fact, better yet, we'll check you. And look, I'm on board with the let's take care of Mother Earth scene. You know that. You know I'm alkaline OG granola. I just don't want someone forcing the hand. I want people to get educated and, you know, make the decision for themselves. Don't force me. Because I don't trust you, mother sucker. All right, let's keep reading. There's a lot on here. How much of this do you want to hear? I took a lot of notes. I kind of got overzealous with my notes. Okay, here we go. I'm inclined to think that the scientific dictatorships of the future, and I think there are going to be scientific dictatorships in many parts of the world, will probably be a good deal nearer to the Brave New World pattern than to the 1984 pattern. They will be a good deal nearer, not because of humanitarian qualms of the scientific dictators, but simply because the Brave New World pattern is probably a good deal more efficient than the other. But I think insofar as dictators become more scientific, more concerned with technically perfectly running society, they will be more and more interested in the kind of techniques which I imagined and described from existing realities in Brave New World, so that it seems to me the ultimate revolution is not really that far away. We already have a number of techniques for bringing about this kind of control here, and it remains to be seen when and where by whom they will be applied on a large scale. So right there, he tells you, scientific dictatorships. What did I tell you? The nerds are going to kill us. They're letting the scientists drive all behavior, and I always say, you got to question it. You got to question it. And we got to question everything, right? Climate change, stabbies, health, nutrition, GMOs. But meanwhile, you got big tech, these other nerds over here censoring whoever they think is deemed not true, not scientific enough. I don't know why people trust these scientists wholeheartedly. These psychos, they're testing everything on animals with no empathy, right? They're out of control. Finally, last bit here, because Huxley, he goes through examples of all these studies where they implant electrodes into the brains of the mice. They would execute a trigger 18,000 times a day to these mice, and they would, because they would get a rush, you know. But with some of the mice, they would put an electrode that would either hit the pleasure or the pain center of the brain, and they found they would keep hitting the trigger, hoping for the best. Right? And then they talked about how people in England, working with this guy, Gray Walter, working with asylum patients, had similar devices to cure depression. And then there's this focus on fixing depression in Klaus's books, if you recall. He was talking about the Fourth Revolution in the Fourth Revolution book about neurotechnologies, right? Remember that? This industry of enhancement. And simultaneously, the Great Reset book talks about how depression's a big problem. So you see how those things meld together very nicely and also align with what Huxley's talking about? And I looked it up. It says the World Health Organization predicted depression would be the second main cause of disease burden globally by 2020. Ay, ay, ay. So yeah, basically Brave New World, that's what's going to happen. Santa Claus. Let's get back to, that was a long detour. We're back on the highway, baby. Let's go. Santa Claus, he says that they're going to use blockchain. This is from Jay's words, right? He's like, oh, you know, he wants the blockchain to track and trace everything through the Internet of Things so they can redistribute everything. And, you know, the blockchain will get rid of the idea of private property and land rights. They're going to redistribute your land through global satellite tracking and tracing. Carbon footprint's going to be monitored by the same thing. That's where Jay's talking about how they're going to tell you how much electricity and water you can have. They're going to put you in the coffin apartment to get people off the land because people can't own land anymore. He talks about Logan's Run with the death panels. where you get incinerated at 30 as a big honor, and they promise you that you'll pass on through to the better world, the virtual reality world.
This ecosystem, this you're guilty for existing type of system. He goes on and he says that what we're going to have is a new type of blockchain. I'm not saying blockchain itself is evil, but this is Klaus's plan. He says, let's use a blockchain system to track and trace everything on the planet through Internet of Things so that we can fairly redistribute everything. That's what he says is everything. This is not a plan for some guy in some, you know, villa somewhere, like a Bond villain in the sense of like, you know, one guy in some villa in France who wants to take over France. No. It's a planetary plan. It's the whole planet. It's the whole ecosystem. He says this new type of blockchain that we'll put in place will get rid of the idea of private property and land rights, and it will redistribute everything through global satellite tracking and tracing via the Internet of Things.
Now, here's the thing. The term private property doesn't appear in Klaus's books. It doesn't say they're going to fairly redistribute everything. Not in that language, not in those words. But the ideas are in the book. Just not in such, InfoWars-ish terms. I'll read you from the Fourth Revolution book, and you can decide what you think, okay? The technologies of the Fourth Industrial Revolution presents with an opportunity to manage the externalities of the previous industrial revolutions by embarking on a more sustainable path, that of protecting the global commons. Most of the world's households will have at least one 3G phone by 2030. The use of distributed ledgers, such as the blockchain for mobile carbon trading, could give individuals an equal quota consistent with the Earth's planetary boundaries. The use of blockchain could also be used to manage water allocations and deforestation. In fact, the government of Honduras is already exploring the potential for distributed ledgers to help with land rights allocation. So yeah, the book, it doesn't, you know, the Fourth Industrial Revolution alludes to the idea that the digital world will, in fact, change our lives exponentially, and we're going to have to find a way to prevent the elites, you know, from getting richer and the poor getting poorer, so let's look to the elites to help us out with that. That's what they say. Oh my God, we're all going to die. Let me see, what else do we got here? Okay, another note from the book. The first challenge is to ensure that the benefits of the Fourth Industrial Revolution are distributed fairly. The wealth and well-being generated by previous industrial revolutions were, and continue to be, unevenly distributed. While inequality between countries has reduced considerably since the 70s due to rapid development of emerging market nations, inequality within countries is rising. Okay. We're almost done, folks. Hang in there. Keep your eyes peeled. Okay, here we go. Then there's an argument that they want to get rid of the firewall of nation states. That we can bring in the Internet of Things and get rid of national regulations that are in the way. And the Internet of Things will start rolling out the microchips, embedding them into your body. But here's my thing. You know, Trump was real big into 5G and Internet of Things. He was the one opening up the frequency spectrum that big tech needed to get the 5G out. If you read my book, Conspiracy Theories and Unpopular Culture, the book, or maybe you listened to the shows, I did shows on 5G. The big tech has been rushing this thing out. It's the next Cold War, space race, excuse me. So that's a big deal for big tech. Right, I'm going to read you from the White House's website. President Trump and his administration have taken strong action to remove unnecessary regulatory barriers to 5G infrastructure build-out, helping secure America's place as the world leader in 5G readiness. What's the regulatory barriers? Is it studies in human health and the effect of bombarding us with electromagnetic radiation? Maybe. Next point here. Jay's talking about the global automated system. There's going to be sensors everywhere controlling everything. 5G, satellites, Internet of Things, all of this to boss you around.
Klaus even says to live, to breathe, to move, to do economic processes, transactions, to eat, you're going to have this. And he says that part of what will be installed is a global, fully automated system with sensors everywhere. Sensors everywhere, tracking, monitoring, tracing, controlling everything, all linked to 5G, all linked to satellites, and all tattling on you, policing you, bossing your bitch bots. You're going to be bitched around by little robots, and everybody's going to love it. Oh, it's so fun to have Alexa sitting there, you know, listening to me. Ha ha, it's so cute. Oh, ask Alexa about Jesus. Ask Alexa about Buddha. Ask Alexa about butts. Ask Alexa about boobs. It's so cute and funny. No, it's not. This is your enslavement.
So yeah, we've got this apocalyptic theme of the Mark of the Beast. Again, very insidious elements here. They're going to have noble reasonings that, like, get guys like me on board for a minute. Talking about we need to be better with the earth. We need to make sure that the elites don't get too much of the wealth. We got to protect whoever, you know, fill in the blank. And, you know, it comes down to a trust thing. And, like, quite frankly, I have zero trust for Gates and Klaus and all these elitists. I just don't. And, you know, some Christians are going to have to make this choice. And they'll be persecuted for it. You don't want the chip that'll help save so-and-so down the road? You don't want the chip in your body to keep Mother Earth cranking? Well, that's how they're going to do it. It's not going to be so black and white and as easy as we think it's going to be, right? And then finally, just for fun, Jay goes off and says the book ends with the Skynet Terminator vision.
And he says, once we pass all the climate carbon regulations, once we get all this in place, Internet of Things, once we get the RNA nanotech in place, then comes the full-on robot lockdown. Skynet Terminator, that's what Klaus ends the book with. I'm Jay Dyer of Jay's Analysis, and this is the Alex Jones Show.
I didn't read anything about Skynet Terminator in the books, but you know what? It's a good time. I thought I'd share that last clip just for a good time. But yeah, there you have it. That's my full breakdown of the 8 points of the World Economic Forum. This is a topic that a lot of truthers have been talking about, like Jay Dyer. And I think pretty much everything he says is true, which leads to a bigger question. Is Alex Jones right? Alex Jones has been talking some crazy stuff for a long time. And maybe he's right. Maybe he's right. So there you go. There you have it. Our next show on The Great Reset will be part 4. So stay tuned for that. That's going to be a good one. We're going to talk about Bill Cooper, who will assess his ideas from Behold a Pale Horse that he was making back in the 80s and 90s. And guess what? Guess what? He was right, too. He knew it, too. They all knew it. The truth is always known. So there you go. You know, look, I appreciate your support, because this is, again, just a bonus show for supporters on Patreon or Rockfin. If you like the show, tell a friend. Tell them to sign up and get all this information. I didn't realize the reception I would get from these Great Reset shows. People are loving them. They're saying it's very eye-opening. So, you know, in fact, now that I'm talking about it, I think I'm going to make part 4 of the Bill Cooper thing available in the free feed. I didn't know that everyone would be so interested in this topic. So, like, on some levels, I got to play this game of, like, I want the masses to get this information because they need it. So I'm going to make part 4 in the free feed. But, yeah, tell a friend. If you like this stuff, tell them to check out the shows. They can check it on the free feed. I'm going to put the Bill Cooper show on there, too, I think. You can have them sign up. Why don't you go ahead and car salesman them to sign up. No, tell them to check it out on the free feed. Start sharing this information. They can start with episode 1 on the free feed and see what they think. All right, thanks for your support. As always, my friend, stay woke.